Hello and welcome to Better Construction with Sean McStay, the podcast where we discuss design and construction techniques, products, and details that lead to a better built environment. All right, and welcome to this week's episode of Better Construction. This week, I am very happy to have with me Andrew Legge. Andrew is the founder and managing partner at Havelock Wool. So, Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me. Happy to be here.
So, lots of questions I have on my end on the product itself. But as I typically do with these episodes, I want to jump into you a little bit because you have an interesting story. How did you kind of start out in getting into the business side of things and then get into building materials?
It's a very long answer, Sean, and I'm going to try to make it short so we don't put anybody to sleep right at the start. But the background is really New Zealand based more than anything. I was leaving the finance business in Southeast Asia, and I had been spending a lot of time in New Zealand for personal reasons, all fun related, but in that also noticing there seemed to be some really unique and exciting business opportunities with great products and really, you know, interesting stories associated with them. And this is where I'm going to fast forward. I met a group of people who wanted to do something with insulation. And they, of course, wanted to use the main staple of New Zealand, which was wool. And so I did some research, had some commentary for those individuals, and then thought that I would just sort of go on my merry way. And it just stuck. And I kept talking to people subsequently back in the U.S. in the space, architects, builders, insulation installers. And what I found was that there were all these products that were really, you know, subpar at best. And here there was this amazing natural fiber that was not only natural, but also a high-performing, high-integrity fiber that could solve this seemingly large disconnect in the insulation market. And so I kicked the idea around for a couple of years after that initial meeting. And then finally in 2013, we launched the business.
Okay. And so in New Zealand, obviously, sheep are quite prevalent. Is using sheep wool as an insulation something that's done there traditionally? Or is that also kind of a new type of material for them, or newer, I guess I should say?
It's not new. In fact, you know, one of the most iconic buildings in the world, being British Parliament, is insulated with wool. Edinburgh Castle in Scotland was recently redone and insulated with wool. Using wool as insulation goes back, you know, almost 1,000 years probably. Has it been formalized in terms of a business that's knocking on the door of builders and architects? Yes. But you're talking, you know, one of the smallest niches there is in a gargantuan industry. So there are groups in New Zealand that do it. I would say that it is much more likely that you would end up with wool in your house and not even know it. That actually happened to me. I built a house in New Zealand and it was, I'm okay admitting that it was insulated with wool and I didn't know. Way more prevalent there, mainstream, no.
Okay. And so when you were looking to start the company in the U.S. and in North America, I should say, what were you looking at as far as the competitive marketplace and what made you think, okay, this is going to have a shot? Because it's a fairly different type of product compared to what people would normally think of for insulation.
Yeah. Well, personal interests in, you know, more natural, sustainable, yet, you know, I say high performance is part of the company, but, you know, the explanation here is there's this notion that if you get something that's natural or whole, that it doesn't work. And I think there is a lot of that, frankly. And so what stuck out to me was in these early conversations, it was easy to learn about the science of a wool fiber. None of this stuff is make-believe. This is real data. And the statistics and the testing is available. So it was easy to very quickly get your head around that. And then you know, you could cross-reference that with what seemed to be happening when you speak to market participants in the U.S. with insulation, right? At the time, I was looking at reports that were telling me it's a $16 billion industry. The other day, I saw one that said $17.5 billion, and that was October 2020 data. So there's obviously been some growth there. But you know, this becomes very quickly a business school box checking exercise where you're saying, wow, like you could do something better. You could introduce a better product and you could build a huge business, in my mind, that would only be 0.5% of the overall market. And so I sort of felt like on the back of the conversations we'd been having and the support that we seem to have from, you know, experienced multi-generational builders, you know, architects are easy to find and happy to have a chat about, you know, what's going on in the material space. So we did all of that. We even talked to a bunch of installers, and we felt good about the overall market opportunity and our ability to communicate the advantages of wool such that we thought we could make something happen fairly quickly. And I will say that we were advised by people that have been in the space for a long time that this would take 10 years. And, you know, I sat there, it seems like yesterday, thinking to myself, I mean, I literally remember where I was sitting when that comment was made. And I thought, that happens to everyone else. It won't happen to us. Well, we just turned 7 in October. And, you know, depending upon what your measure is, I would say we're there as a business, which is to say we can keep the lights on. But in terms of whatever aspirations, you know, we might have had, and even if you cut those goals in half, it's going to be a 10-year mission. So that was great advice.
It's always funny when that lines up.
Yeah. But the great thing is, you know, we've got an amazing product. We try to match the integrity of our business to the integrity of the product that we deal with. And it's been nothing but fun. You know, we've had a lot of dark days. I've driven to work by myself, you know, sometimes coming to work by myself for 7 years. And, certainly in some of those, you know, travels back and forth, there's been a question mark as to whether or not, you know, we were doing the right thing in terms of personal time and, you know, potential age of life, you know, is this the right thing to be doing for me and my family? And it was very easy to not waver and to just keep the head down and keep forging ahead. Because we knew the product was as good as we thought it was. And if we could get it into jobs, that was the reporting that we were getting back, right? Of course, we know we're biased. We know it doesn't really matter what we think. But we also know the strength, the integrity, the complexibility, and the enjoyability of a coarse wool fiber. So it was pretty easy to stick it out. And of course, you know, having had 2 good years in a row now, I think it's pretty easy to say we're glad we did.
Well, that's good. Well, let's. I want to get back to some of the business questions for sure, because I have some interest to learn from there. Let's talk a little bit about the product itself, though, because there's probably people listening who aren't familiar with it, or I mean, they know what wool is, but aren't familiar with it as an insulation, and maybe have some of the common concerns that you would run into. So I would stay kind of what's the pitch for wool insulation in a building?
Sure. So just to get it out of the way, you know, insulation typically comes in a couple of forms, you know, one being a rectangular bat, the other being some sort of loose fill blow in. We're seeing now more rigid stuff and exterior, and we're not in that space, but we do make a bat and we do make a loose fill blow in. And the reason for that is we never wanted to try to convince anybody that one was better than the other. The high performance guys, of course, like loose fill because you can avoid, you know, any slumping of bats. But then, you know, there's a lot of people who would rather go fast and use a bat and just get it in the cavity and move on. And we're not here to have that debate. There are other people who are more involved and more experienced in that discussion. We're here to say, look, this is what a wool fiber does. and you can have it in whatever form you want it in. And so, you know, there's a couple of things that I would point to, you know, kind of out of the gate. One is moisture management. That's become increasingly relevant because of the way we've changed building practices, specifically trying to achieve air tightness. Mm-hmm. Anybody who knows anything about a wall cavity, particularly where there is air tightness, knows that whether it be through condensation or vapor drive or both, you're going to get moisture in that wall cavity. And so that inevitability means that there needs to be an escape path. And of course, we're seeing that now in more and more membranes that, you know, allow for varying permeability while still creating that air tightness element. But what you don't have is a fiber that you can put in there that is by its construct able to inherently manage moisture like a wool fiber will. So basically against roughly 65% relative humidity. So higher humidity, the wool fiber is going to work to take that moisture out of the air and it's going to hold on to it. It's important to note that it is a keratin, so it's protein-based, so it's not going to support the growth of mold and mildew. Hmm. And then when that ambient air changes, which it inevitably will, and the RH goes below 65% humidity, that wool fiber is naturally going to release that moisture into the air. And so there's a couple things happening there. One is you're getting moisture management. Of course, you're getting temperature control as a result of some of that. But you're also not getting a fiber that is going to break down and be less good at what it's designed to do over time, right? This can happen all the time because if you look at how dynamic, of course, wool fiber is under a microscope, you're going to see something wildly dynamic with five follicles and a lot of different things happening there versus, a fiberglass fiber or even a cotton one. You're going to see more like a piece of spaghetti with just not a lot of resilience to it. And you can just sort of see, think about when you're wearing a cotton shirt and you're sweating, you know, kind of one thing happens. The shirt gets wet. If the breeze comes up, you get cold and you're uncomfortable until you get rid of that cotton shirt. You know, conversely, if you do that with wool, it's going to move the moisture away from you. It's going to hold on to it. It's going to get rid of it. And, you know, you're going to feel pretty good pretty quickly. And so this is a very similar deal in terms of, you know, what we're trying to do with a wool fiber, which is basically put it to work for its intended use. There are some very little known things about wool fibers beyond that, where you can look at the amino acids in its construction and see that it will irreversibly bond with formaldehyde, nitrogen oxide, and sulfur dioxide. So what's interesting there is you're getting air purification, but it's really a double positive because let's start with the comparison against other forms of insulation. You're not emitting harmful chemicals. You're not emitting particulate that, you know, can find its way into your respiratory tract. In a lot of instances, it might be a shard of glass. You know, you're talking about a wool fiber, which is not dangerous at all. And then beyond that, you're talking about some of these other things that we inherently find in other building materials. You've got an opportunity for this stuff to be absorbing that and keeping it out of your living space. Sorry for the long answer, but essentially it's this really amazing fiber that we sort of forgot about. And, you know, we wanted to, you know, be more focused on synthetic ones because you can better control the cost of the development of that fiber than you can a wool one. And so, you know, the world forgot about wool, except in places like New Zealand and Australia and UK and China, where it's readily available in abundant supply. And, We're just trying to take it back and put it in that space where it wants to be. And, you know, there's some really cool advantages to doing that that are great for an occupant of a, you know, of a living space.
Okay. Yeah. So from a moisture management standpoint, that makes sense to me. Certainly the chemical off-gassing, that's a big topic with other forms of insulation that is, sounds like much less so or actually non-existent with this. It helps with it, if anything. What about being that it's an organic material, longevity for it? I mean, it's keratin-based, so I'd imagine it's very long-lasting, but is there kind of a lifespan for the wool insulation?
We're really comfortable saying life of the structure. Yep. You know, we haven't been around long enough to say, you know, hey, how's our product performed over the last 100 years? But, you know, a lot of the things that are going to adversely impact other fibers are not going to affect wool. So, you know, you can employ some pretty basic common sense here to make you feel good about its ability, you know, again, in that moisture management. This is different than moisture, but think about it this way. You can take a coarse wool fiber and bend it 20,000 times on itself and it won't break. It's just able to do things that man-made synthetic fibers are not. And so we feel wildly comfortable in its ability to outlast a structure. But what we're, you know, when we put a number to it, we talk about 75 years.
Okay. That makes sense. Another big question that comes up with insulation due to some unfortunate incidents that have happened over the last kind of 5 years is obviously fire control. And when people think of, again, of a biologic, material, they're going to maybe be a little bit more worried than they might be otherwise. What kind of fire characteristics do you find with the wool insulation?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up. I mean, we overlook it. So, you know, the stats are that wool is naturally self-extinguishing. It's got a high nitrogen content of about 14%. It won't support a flame till about 1100 degrees Fahrenheit. So literally, it is zero issue in a fire scenario. If anything, it is going to help you out. There has been some interesting stuff out. It's been a video on the BBC for years comparing bedroom style bedding, you know, synthetics versus wool. And then another one came out more recently where same comparison, but you're basically seeing that the wool doesn't burn. And in fact, they abandoned the test. Whereas flashover with synthetics is happening in a scary amount of time. Maybe the only thing more scary is this type of smoke that it's producing. So I should have mentioned it when you asked me about some of the main characteristics. I think we get away from it because, you know, we either take it for granted or we, you know, see in the industry the way the E84 test, which is what we all use for flame spread and smoke development, is kind of a bit antiquated. And in fact, in Canada, there's a lot more going on in fire testing than there is in the U.S. And I think we would do well to adopt some of the practices that you guys have.
Okay. So it sounds like a lot of positives for the wool insulation. As everyone knows, with any construction products, there's going to be challenges with it as well. What are maybe some of the challenges people might run into if they are looking at using wool insulation?
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up, because, of course, we're not perfect. I would say, just to close out the flame spread pieces, just for ultimate clarity, we do conform to Class A of the building code. We have gone the testing route. We just think that there's a better way to do it. But you do not need an exception to use wool. Based on that E84 test, we conform to Class A. So no issues there. And then what are the challenges? Well, you know, you're getting a high integrity fiber. Guess what? It's not free. So wool costs more than a lot of the insulations that it gets compared to. Very quickly, there's geographic dispersion and there's buying power, you know, that is very real in the insulation market. So, but if we speak in averages, it's fair to say that if there's a spectrum of insulation cost, on the low end, you would put fiberglass and cellulose, and on the high end, you would put closed cell foam and wool. So the important thing here is we're in the box. We're more expensive, but we're not a multiple of the industry. We can just be like closed cell foam, two or three times more expensive than fiberglass or cellulose. So cost is an issue. And then it's an issue that's becoming, you know, it goes away with education, right? It's not like you're paying more for something that you're not getting. Right back to that example of, oh, it's natural, so you should feel better about the fact that you can compost this when you're done using it. It's not going to add to landfill, which, by the way, is true. You're going to get all these advantages while you're using wool in your structure, and that's what you're paying for. And so I think that is something that we're seeing to be less and less of an issue. You know, if you add to that on average, insulation is about 2% of construction costs. you know, on the overall spend here, if you start the conversation at the right time, you know, you're really talking about a rounding error. And then the other challenge is the delivery mechanism. You know, the trade, and in this instance, I'll point at installers, they don't like change. You know, they have a formula for how they do things. It's all volume based. So it's, you know, I've got this house. It requires this much insulation. This is how long it's going to take me. It's highly competitive. You're literally talking razor thin margins. And so if you now come along with a wool product that I don't know or understand and I have to price it, basically what they'll do is they'll make it so expensive that it's not actually relative to the product. It's relative to them being concerned that they're going to lose money.
Okay.
And so now that, you know, 2 or 3X for an installer that knows what they're doing becomes 5X. And it's because, I mean, the worst, that's one thing, because you don't get the job when you're 5 times more expensive, right? The worst one is when the installer says they can do it and you send them a whole bunch of stuff and call them repeatedly to help them get ready for the job. And they don't respond. And then they turn up on the job site and they realize in the first hour that they're going to lose their shirt. And then they call you and now all of a sudden it's your problem. That one is a tough one to deal with, because you've tried everything to put your best foot forward. But the issues here end up being the same thing, which is it's very hard to crack into the environment through the traditional channels. And so what we have found is that there's a lot of really crafty, intelligent, inspired people out there. And so our conversations, you know, have shifted quite a bit to people taking on the install themselves, or the builder not calling the sub and taking it on with one of his guys, because, you know, most of those guys do not enjoy working with fiberglass. But when you talk to them about working with raw wool, they get kind of excited about it. So, you know, there's a whole bunch of ways to deal with that. But I would say the shortcomings for us, which cost is becoming less of an issue. And then it's about, you know, how do I get this really cool product in my walls? And we're getting past that hurdle with leaps and bounds every day.
Okay. Related to that question, then, who's kind of the ideal customer for the product? And you got into that a little bit. I mean, wool insulation, the first time I was exposed to your product was actually seeing it on social media for all of these van conversions and people who are, you know, van life and all that type of thing. And then obviously being involved with Passive House, I've seen people be involved, people wanting to use that product for its biophilic reasons and all of those types of things. But going forward, do you see this staying in those kind of niches, or do you see this being applicable for, like, say, getting into maybe high performance multifamily? Where do you see that going?
Getting wool involved in a project can really just come down to one person's decision matrix. The van life community has been so much fun for us. But, you know, just summarize it. It's people who want to be outside and they're in small spaces and they care about, you know, their environment. And so when you come across them with a high performance natural product, it's sort of a no-brainer. Oh, and by the way, there's a whole ton of moisture that gets created in that condensation box that you're driving around in. Don't worry, wool can handle that too. So that was something, I mean, to be honest, I bought a Sprinter van in 2016 and shoved a bunch of wool in it. And about a year and a half later, we decided to try marketing it. You know, that was never part of the mission. It's just been a really fun add-on. You know, for us, where we see the business is homeowners more and more bubbling up saying, you know, hey, I don't want this junk in my house, whatever it might be. And not just insulation, right? I mean, we've seen a manufacturer-led race to the bottom in product integrity, because it's all about returns, right? And if you can't sell a product for more in a competitive environment, that's very difficult to do, then the way that you bolster your returns is to find cheaper ways to make your product. Yeah. Well, if you're the end user, you're probably not getting a better product tomorrow than you might have gotten today, right? So, you know, for us, we come at this from a totally different aspect, which is you're the buyer who's thinking about building 2,200 square feet perfectly versus 3,000 square feet with some excess space and therefore cost. And, you know, of course, this is everything that goes into building. Yeah. And so that's where we hone our conversations and our marketing efforts is, you know, people who really have an appetite to think about their surroundings and how they're performing. And so most of our communication and frankly, most of our sales are direct to consumers. So this is the person who's topping in the Google box saying healthy alternative insulation. And what we try to do when that turns into an inbound conversation is just help people make informed decisions, right? Whether you buy wool or not, please realize that this whole industry is stacked against you as a one-time builder of a house, right? Because everyone has their playbook and it doesn't include your wants. It includes their ability to deliver you the product they said they would deliver, and they don't want to deviate that much. So that, I think, is one way of saying that we don't spend a lot of time with builders. You know, they're stretched, they're hardworking guys. They need their stuff done on a timely manner. They're dependent upon all sorts of subs. They don't like change. We understand that. So anytime we're in a project, if you speak to a builder that's using our stuff, they'll typically give you a good report, but they're not going to tell you they're going to use it again unless it's specified. Now, on the specification side, of course, that takes us to the architects. And our conversation there is very much about, you know, hey, guys, you know, we're going to double the 2.4 trillion square feet of space on the planet over the next 40 years. You know, greenhouse gas emissions, 40% of those are coming from the built environment. 11% of that figure is materials. Like, can you guys start thinking about different materials and hopefully low carbon ones? And that's us, and that's cellulose, and that's straw bale. You know, there are great options out there. Cotton can come and play along in that space. But, you know, what people don't appreciate is that, you know, the wool trade globally is responsible for the sequestration of 525,000 tons of atmosphere-derived carbon every year. So, you know, you've got carbon sink potential. You've got, you know, come see our operation anytime you feel like it. My power bill is like $5,000 a month because I'm running very simple machinery. I have no high heat. I have no glues. I have no bonding agents. You know, I'm using a needle punch to make my bats. So we're hopeful, and we continue to put up the good fight. We're hopeful that the architect community is going to come along and really start to prioritize, you know, these lower carbon yet high performing materials, and we're in that mix.
Okay. One last question on the product. Looking forward, do you see any issues with capacity? Like, and there's a lot of sheep in the world, but, you know, is there constraints to access to that material as you grow? Has that been a challenge?
Our goal, you know, as we were talking about, you know, before we hopped on here, the U.S. insulation market's somewhere between $16 and $17 billion a year. Half a percent of that market is $80 million. That's always been sort of a dream goal for us. We didn't create this company to take 5% market share. And to do that, you know, would be a challenge for the global wool supply. For our goals of offering a high integrity, better product to the people that want to buy it within that half a percent range, that's easy from a supply perspective. Okay. And so, you know, beyond that, that's a step too far, because you know, for me at this stage, like, of course I think about it, but in terms of us, you know, achieving what we want to achieve, you know, and I think being realistic about market acceptance, you know, we can have a total win here for all parties involved and be fine within the whatever constraints might exist in the global wool supply.
Okay. That makes a ton of sense to me for sure. All right. Well, as I get towards the end of these podcasts, I always have two questions that I ask. The first one's kind of a fun one because you get a magic wand. But if you could wave that magic wand and get rid of any one misconception about wool insulation, which one misconception would you pick?
We get painted with a mom and pop brush. And frankly, I don't think there's anything wrong with being a mom and pop. So I'm not defensive by any stretch. Nor do I think there's anything wrong with the label for that matter. But there's an element of frustration that comes with it too. You know, we do our homework. There's real science and data behind what we talk about. We see what happens in the industry and we try to do the exact opposite, transparency being a perfect example. If you want to see our testing data, just send me an email. I'll send it all to you. We think that it stinks that the industry is opaque as it is, but we can see why. And so I think, you know, having last year gone through the LCA EPD process and, you know, we're working really hard with RDH to do some testing that's outside, you know, the realm of just kind of what everybody does, the conformist standards, because that's where wool really shines. But, you know, then you come back to this scenario where it's like, well, no one cares because it's not in the box and no one looks outside the box. So I think at some stage we'd like to, you know, sort of be seen as a company that, you know, is really trying to do better for the end user and not be, you know, sort of off in the corner of the discussion, like, oh, they're just the little old wool guys. Don't worry about what they say. I think it would be really fun if we could ever see that happen.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a great one to get rid of for sure. The final question I always ask is a personal interest question for me. I read and collect a lot of books. And so if you were to recommend a book right now, personal or professional, which one would it be?
I actually just started last night and I'm embarrassed that I'm not going to remember the author's full name, but he's got a trilogy. He's written about an atlas for California. And he's written about the tree species in California. I think his name is Ira Kaufman.
Okay.
He's also done in the trilogy something about water. And not only, of course, the importance of water, but what it means to the state of California and how those rights have been carved up. So I'm early. I can't say I just finished the book and therefore you should read it, but I'm really excited as I get into it. And you know, that enthusiasm was clear when I started into it actually just last night. So that would be one for me. I appreciate it sort of specific to where I am because I live in California, but it's also quite interesting if you think about the size and what gets produced there, not only on a US level, but a global one.
Most certainly. All right. Well, that's a great sounding one for sure. All right. So for everyone listening and watching, I'm going to go ahead and put links in the description to Havelock Wool, to those guys on social media. They do a lot of interesting posts. So you can definitely follow along there, learn a little bit more about the product. And with that, Andrew, thank you so much for your time today.
Sean, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks, guys, for listening to this week's episode of Better Construction. I really appreciate you taking the time to do so. If you have any questions for myself or the guest, you feel free to reach out on social media or on the website at www.betterconstructionmedia.com. And with that, we'll talk again next time.